How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, taking your phone calls and emails on all subjects in the world of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, of course, joined us for a brief while last week. We had Lance Storm in studio. Lance was here to basically talk about the news of the past 2 weeks since we'd been off for WrestleMania. But now that we're all caught up, got a lot of current news to talk about today, including last night's UFC 112 pay-per-view. Talk about Anderson Silva's performance, which almost caused Dana White to go off the deep end. We're going to talk about that, plus the show in detail. Talk about the war, Monday Night War. It's been changed yet again. We've got a new permanent start time for Impact. We've got a replay for Impact, which aired at an odd time this past Thursday night with no warning whatsoever. We've got a brand new TNA show. That's right, TNA is adding a new show to Monday nights. We'll tell you what that is, why it was done, and what you can look forward to seeing on that show, and whether or not you need to go out of your way to watch it at all. We got more on Chris Kanyon. We got some big shows coming up this weekend, including the Strikeforce show on CBS, which could be the end of the road in Strikeforce for, well, a couple of guys, including a dude in the main event facing Dan Henderson, Jake Shields, putting his title on the line. And I watched Jake Shields actually on Bully Beatdown last night. We'll talk about that a little bit later. That was something else. The other Dixie Carter is dead. I've pretty much just told you that news right there. The Dixie Carter of Designing Women fame has passed away. And I know some people heard that Dixie Carter died and freaked out. It's not the same woman. This is the TV star. So now that that's out of the way, we'll talk about the Linda McMahon memo, which came out in the last couple of days. It actually had been out since the mid-90s, but just now becoming a story yet again since she's running for Senate. Goldberg talked WrestleMania. Flava Flav is going to be on your television set in 2010. He's going to be hosting Raw. We'll talk about that and other Raw guest hosts as well. And a lot of other news. Of course, phone calls and emails on a wide variety of subjects, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We got 2 hours to talk about everything, and as noted, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. So we'll kick it off here in a couple of moments. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Mike, how you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing better than Dana White is right now.
Yeah, first off, he was very upset at the press conference after the show, the UFC in Abu Dhabi show, which aired last night
very
on pay-per-view.
Yeah, I need to emphasize how upset he actually was.
Yeah, and then he went on Twitter, and there were some people that were rather critical of the show, and boy, did he go off on those people. He just lost his mind. And, of course, they went to Abu Dhabi. They have been bought into by a company over there. The company has invested $125 million for a percentage, small percentage of the company. And they went over there. They wanted to have a great show. They brought in Henzo Gracie, who's very close to those people run the company. In fact, he was, I forget the main guy's name, but Henzo was his jiu-jitsu instructor. So, obviously, it was a big deal to have Henzo's first UFC fight take place in Abu Dhabi. We had Anderson Silva defending against Damian Maia, which one would think would be a quick fight. It would either be Maia destroying him on the feet, Silva destroying him on the feet, or Maia taking him down and tapping him out. And then we had the semi-main event of BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar, which, you know, most people figured win or lose, and most expected Edgar to lose. It was going to be an exciting fight. Instead, we got one, I can't call it the worst UFC pay-per-view of all time because the first half was all right, but this was not a great show, and the main event in particular was insufferable. Mike, talk about what happened.
Well, if anybody out there has ever seen a Roy Jones Jr. fight, and you know Anderson Silva is a little bit obsessed with Roy Jones Jr., but if you saw Jones Jr. at his peak, he would do things like clown around and not throw a punch in a round and still, you know, win the rounds because he'd be embarrassing his opponent so incredibly badly, but he wouldn't do anything to actually put him away, and he would draw the fights out, and his excuse for doing that was always, I'm going to draw these out to get entertainment value to the people, and then I'll put them away in the 12th round lightly without hurting them. not exactly why people like fights.
No.
And Anderson Silva did his best impression of Roy Jones. And the other thing that Anderson Silva needs to ask Roy Jones is, how many pay-per-views did you sell? Because of Jones's style, he never drew a dime on pay-per-view. In fact, HBO never bothered to even put him on pay-per-view most of the time. And he's always on poor numbers. And Anderson Silva did his best impression of that last night. He comes out, and I didn't even think Maia had much of a chance on the ground. I thought he had a good chance, but I had more faith in Silva's defense if it did actually go that way. But we never got a chance to see that because Silva just clowned around him and circled him and hit him with jabs and did all of these wacky dances and motions and was cursing at him in Portuguese. And it was just, it was the, one of the more bizarre fights I'd ever seen. He won a 10-8 round by barely throwing any punches and basically just making movements, but it was embarrassing. And it's one thing to do the type of stuff Silva did in the first two rounds and then knock him out at the end of the second round. After all that embarrassment, after all that humiliation he's putting on Maia, who knows he can't do a damn thing against him, instead of doing that and knocking him out or coming out in the third round, not playing and knocking him out, he just made it an absolute joke. He seemed to run out of gas by acting like a jackass.
It was interesting. You mentioned a 10-8 round. I'm looking at my report here and my own personal scorecard, and I think it was in round one, I gave it a 10-8. Round two was the one where I was actually entertained by round two because he mocked him in such a amazing... So it was such an amazing spectacle to see him... He did his wacky dance. It was like he was trying to summon demons. He shot his head in and out. He gyrated. He pounded on the mat and dared the guy to try a takedown and all this and that. And I scored it 10-7 because it was such a it was so one-sided. And then, like, later I was thinking, why did I even give that a 10-7 at all? Especially, like, the later rounds, like, you know, round four and round five. I mean, Silva did absolutely nothing in those rounds. I mean, it's such a weird... It's such a weird round to score. Did he really deserve a 10-8?
You know what? I thought he did because he seemed to... He busted his nose in that round, and he did enough with the humiliation involved for me to score it a 10-8, although I can understand if people scored it a 10-9, that's fine, but that was a 10-8 round. And again, that clowning, if it would have ended in the knockout there, or if he would have come out like a beast in round three and just laid waste to him and said, I'm done with this, nobody would be complaining right now. I mean, some people would be bitching about, oh, you know, that's pro wrestling, that's boxing. Realistically, though, if he would have laid waste to him, nobody would have gave a crap. But the fact that not only did he not lay waste to him, he seemed to get tired from what he was doing, so he almost seemed to deflate there. And I gave the guy a 10-8 round. I actually had Maia winning the last round. I had the fourth round a draw, and that was even the bigger insult on top of it. Was a guy that obviously is not in Silva's league, he let back into the fight where people gave him mercy points. I mean, the fourth round was Silva dominated that round pretty much. I mean, Maia could do nothing against him, but you could not give Silva that round. In all honesty, I couldn't give him that round. And I had Maia winning the fifth.
Well, yeah, Maia made a comeback in the fifth round. I mean, he didn't do anything that was like he was going to end the fight or anything like that, but... He had quite a little comeback, and the people were behind him. They were chanting his name. And, you know, I just remember watching, and I thought, you know, if Silva does one of his goofy dances here, and Maia just punches him right in the face and knocks a dude out, I mean, Maya's going to be the biggest UFC star in the world for at least a couple of days. I don't know about forever or anything like that. But, you know, it was... Anderson Silva is like... I don't know how to explain it. It was like I had a whole bunch of people over last night watching this show, and my God, did they ever hate this. And it's kind of weird because I'm trying to think, you know, the way that they responded, I mean, they would have thought it was so awesome if Maia would have knocked him out in the middle of these shenanigans. But then I think, like, you know, the next Anderson Silva fight, if he's fighting a, I don't know, Chael Sonnen or whoever... I mean, if I actually told my friends, hey, there's a pay-per-view tonight, Anderson Silva's facing Chael Sonnen, I mean, I can't imagine any of them wanting to come over to see that fight. I mean, maybe Anderson Silva and GSP, because I think a lot of casual fans, at least, that don't think about the weight cuts and that sort of thing and the stuff that goes into it. I think a lot of casual fans would think, Wow. Now, that's a pay-per-view fight I'd pay to see, because hopefully GSP kills the guy. But Anderson Silva against just your average goofball, I don't think anyone's possibly going to care.
Yeah, I saw the live showing, and, you know, people were asking me about it after, whether they should order it or not, and they, you know, brought up how everything was and then said, hey, yeah, they made the announcement, at least during the fight, afterwards not so much, but during the fight, that Anderson Silva was going to drop down to 170 pounds and face George St. Pierre. And, you know, all of them, after having their faces contorted, after telling him about what Silva's fight with Maya was like, still will order that fight. I mean, that's a million-buy fight, no problem. They, you know, no matter what people say about GSP and Silva's last performances, they're still going to buy that fight. But realistically, you know, he's got to reprove himself. I mean, he's back to on, I can see Dana White putting him on UFC Fight Night. Honest to God, or something like that. He joked about, well, he didn't joke about it because he was pissed at the time, but he talked about, you know, you may be the first champion you see back in the prelims.
Yeah.
You know, that won't happen, but I can see him on Spike TV, and frankly, you know, that's not all that bad of a deal, because it's not like he's a super pay-per-view draw anyway. He is, in a way, right now, kind of like Roy Jones Jr. He's an HBO fighter, not a pay-per-view one. At least Jones back in the day, that is.
Yeah, I mean, as noted, the fifth round when Maya was making a comeback, there were people chanting Maya's name, but there were also people chanting for GSP. Like, they wanted to see the guy that was going to come in and make this guy pay for his behavior. And GSP was the guy that they thought it could be. It also helped that GSP was down there, obviously.
And also it's secure, though, also, you know, more than ever, GSP is the, you know, worldwide face of that company.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, it is, I don't know, it's kind of hard to say, because, I mean, were they really chanting for GSP because they wanted the fight? Or were they chanting for GSP because he was down there? And it's like shows in Canada where they get bored and they start chanting for the local hockey team. It's not like they want to see the hockey team against whoever's having a boring fight. So, I don't know, but I do think that...
You know what, the people in Montreal would actually want to see that.
Well, that's true, actually. We're going to head to a break here very quickly. We're actually already up to the break. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk more about this, more UFC, more pro wrestling, and answer your phone calls and emails. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. A lot of stuff to talk about today. We're covering the UFC 112 pay-per-view here to kick it off, and we've talked about the Anderson Silva-Damian Maya fight. Anderson Silva retains his title via shenanigans in the fifth round, and a lot of stuff to talk about on that show, including a new lightweight champion, Frankie Edgar, beat BJ Penn, and I didn't see it coming. I know a lot of people didn't see it coming. I know there was a lot of money coming in on BJ, believe it or not. He was like an 8-1 favorite or something like that, and people were still betting on him. So, anyway, if you're one of the people that bet on Edgar, congratulations today. Well done. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, the odds were getting up to that point where it was almost becoming like, you know, put $100 on Frankie Edgar, you know, expect to lose it, but put $100 on there just to see what happens. And, you know, I'm stunned. You know, he said it last week. It's, you know, you knew unless he walked right into a BJ Penn right hand and got knocked out in the first second of the fight, that odds are with his style, Frankie Edgar was going to come out of this with a loss, but he'd come out of it, you know, with his stock on the rise. Now his stock is way up there. He truly, truly provided the answer to BJ Penn, who... you know, it seemed to be a lot of guys, you know, Maya in the first three rounds of his fight, Silva in the last three of his. It just seemed to be something got zapped out of fighters. And BJ Penn, it looked like, you know, in the first couple of rounds, he was, you know, actually, you know, landing the harder punches. He didn't land as many as Edgar. It's not like they threw a whole lot of fists at each other. But it just seemed to be he got everything zapped out of him pretty much in the fourth round. Edgar was still in motion. He was being more aggressive. He was taking over the ring generalship of Penn and was landing leg kicks. And he actually landed a couple takedowns. And it didn't keep Penn down for long, but it was just kind of amazing to see the rise of Frankie Edgar doing everything right in this fight. And BJ Penn just not exactly being slow or anything, but just seeming like he was just a half second off, and Edgar really was incredibly impressive.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to take anything away from Edgar or anything, but I mean, I just based on BJ's performance, I mean, if it came out that BJ had suffered some sort of injury and went into this fight hurt, I would not be shocked at all. He did have a neoprene sleeve on one of his knees, which he normally never does. So, I mean, something was wrong, whether it was a big deal or not a big deal. I mean, something was wrong, but I don't know. He went in there and I didn't notice it so much early on, but in looking back, it was like, this really was not BJ Penn. I mean, you know, he did all of his stuff, but he just, as you noted, half second slow on everything, listless. Just, it was not his night. And I don't know, maybe Edgar would beat him in the rematch as well. But I don't know. I just think a healthy BJ Penn going in there would have been a different story. But I don't know. You know, Edgar, he was very, very fast. He had a very, he's got that kind of herky-jerky sort of style to him that he's, you know, it was interesting early on because he was moving a lot and he had a lot of movement, a lot of, you know, I hate to use the term jerkiness, but that's kind of what it looks like. And he was still getting hit here and there. So that was interesting. But he kept up the pace. And as noted, you know, rounds four, rounds five, it was really kind of turning in his favor. And it was also interesting in looking at my own scorecard. I was, you know, I was scoring every round. And there were so many close rounds in this fight. And not necessarily close in a good way. I mean, there were a couple of, I think the fourth round, I thought basically nothing happened in that round. I mean, there were a couple of shots thrown, but it was to me an insufferable round. And as I added everything up, I mean, I concluded that it was Edgar's fight. I had one round for BJ. I had the final round for Edgar. I had two even rounds. And one of those even rounds I'd given to Edgar, although I said I'm being generous here. And realistically, it's probably an even round, but I'm going to give it to Edgar. And based on that, Edgar won the fight. It was either a draw, if I called that round a draw, or Edgar's fight if I gave it to Edgar. And I just remember adding it all up and thinking, huh, that's interesting. That's not what the result is going to be, but that's interesting that that's what I came up with. And then the judges did, in fact, give it to Edgar, 50-45, 48-47, which would be the closest to mine, and 49-46. So, shocked. I was just shocked they gave it to Edgar.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually had two rounds even because I thought I had the cop-out scorecard having two even. I gave the first round to Penn. The second round I actually had even. The third round I gave to Frankie Edgar, and the fourth round I actually had even, too.
That was my exact scorecard.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That was my exact scorecard.
Okay, and then, yeah, and then the fifth round, obviously, I had Edgar winning, so I had 49-48. But, you know, when they started announcing the scores, and you can see Dana White in the background talking about how close it was, and it was, you know, it was a close fight. The first scorecards announced, it's 50-45. Then it's 48-47, which made sense, and then 49-46, which surprised me, too, and it was like, Jesus, okay, you know, BJ Penn wins the fight. And then they announce that Edgar wins, and it's just like, you got to be kidding me. It was just kind of a surprise with the way those scores were that they really, I mean, 50-45 is just not flat out not fair to BJ Penn whatsoever.
That was a very weird scorecard right there.
Even 49, really, 49-46 was too.
There were a lot of weird, well, I don't know. When you've got a round that's even, and you've got judges that are encouraged not to give even scores, you got to choose a guy, and they chose Edgar, so that's fine.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah, you see 3, 4, and 5 to Edgar that way.
Yeah. We had Renzo Gracie and Matt Hughes. Oh, this fight.
Yes, the fight just specifically made, you know, for things that they did, the UFC did for the United Arab Emirates, who owns the company that paid that 10% of non-voting stock to the UFC. I mean, they gave him Renzo and Hughes in a matchup that everyone there should enjoy, and maybe they did. Renzo Gracie is old, and Matt Hughes, you know, had some mercy on him.
Yeah, there was a lot of hugging. There was a lot of high-fiving. I don't want to see that in a fight. I mean, seriously. Especially in a fight that, I mean, Renzo Gracie is known for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. Matt Hughes is a wrestler. Force these two guys to go to the ground or something. Instead, we got a kickboxing battle with Matt Hughes and Henzo Gracie. My God, this sucked. Just a horrendous fight.
It's, you know, it's one of those fights. It's, I don't mind seeing guys, like, I know some people, that they don't want to see old guys except for Randy Couture fight. And I understand that. But these are the fights that if you ever start streaming your, on your website, on UFC.com, if they start streaming the preliminaries for hardcore fans to watch, so they get a whole day of viewing in the UFC, you put that on there as basically like Pride used to do. You have the exhibition of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and you have a fight like that on there because it just, you know, I'd like to see Henzo Gracie still do, you know, be Henzo Gracie because he's entertaining, and the more he's out there, it helps the UFC because he's such an engaging, you know, charming kind of guy. But with that said, to have him in exhibitions only, Matt Hughes is still, you know, Matt Hughes is not in the super, super upper echelon right now just because he hasn't fought in a while, but he's still up there way past Henzo Gracie.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the first two rounds were just wretched, bad kickboxing, if you even want to call it that. And then the fourth round, Hughes just sort of went to work on him. And not early on, though. I mean, there was a moment early on where Hughes hit him with an overhand right and then backed away. And Joe Rogan is, he basically said, why did he do that? And I did not have an answer for you. And then he kicked his leg out of his leg, to use a wrestling term, and Enzo fell down. And then Matt Hughes went over, extended his hand, and helped the man back to his feet. I was screaming profanities that would get this show kicked off terrestrial radio in the middle of this this third round here. And finally, Hughes finished him off. And God, this just angered me.
A kinder, gentler Matt Hughes. Did you ever think you could see it?
Who in God's name wants to see that?
That's you. Yeah, this brought up, you know, Matt Hughes just being fighting again, brought up, you know, dominant champions in 10 in St. Pierre and Lesnar right now. It brought up how great of a champion Matt Hughes was during his reign. I just remember, like, I think it was 2003, the first Trigg fight, where Hughes just cut this just quiet, you know, I'm not going to explode, just promo, ripping Frank Trigg. It's like, this guy is great. So to see him actually get a win again, hopefully he does have another fight or two on a bigger scale, because I do love seeing Matt Hughes out there, just not as a kickboxer.
He is, I don't want to say he is, but he can be a real-life prick. And I'm sure he'd tell you the same thing. So to see him coming out there and helping the dude back to his feet and everything, I don't want to see it. I want to see a ground battle with these guys, and I didn't get it. Very quickly before the break, Mark Munoz and Kendall Grove was the opener. Hell of a fight. God, this was a great fight.
That was awesome.
Yeah, Kendall destroyed him so utterly in the first round that I actually gave it a 10-7. And Munoz ended up coming back in the second round and made a pro wrestling style comeback. Destroyed him with a barrage of ground and pound. The ref stopped it. And Munoz with the shock win after taking a beating in the first round. That was some good stuff right there. So we're going to talk about the... actually, we're pretty much wrapped up with this pay-per-view. We got some pro wrestling news to talk about, however. And we'll talk about CBS on Strikeforce, or Strikeforce on CBS as well. That's coming up this coming Saturday. And a lot of other pro wrestling and MMA news as well. Plus, your phone calls and emails. That's coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, radio shows, a ton of radio shows. If you love this program, you only get a chance to hear it once per week. Head to WrestlingObserver.com right now. We've got tons and tons of shows available for your downloading pleasure. If you head to the website and scroll down on the right-hand side of the page, there's a list of our latest three free radio shows. They're MP3s. You can download them, put them on your iPod or whatever your media player of choice might be. Listen to them on the computer. And if you love them, consider signing up. We do, on average, about a show a day. At least I do. The website itself, we've got four, five, six different radio shows, always producing content. We usually have between, I'd say about you know, 14 and 18 new radio shows that go up every single week, covering everything, pro wrestling, mixed martial arts. Adam and Mike, you guys talk a lot about hockey and Japanese pro wrestling, various other sports. We cover the history of wrestling, pretty much everything there is to cover. So if you love it, check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Of course, the newsletters as well, Figure Four Weekly, the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Dave has been publishing The Observer since 1982, and new issues go up every single week. These are 35,000-word newsletters on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. There's so much stuff up there. Head up there, check it out, look around, see what you can get as a member, and consider signing up and supporting this program. We're talking about the UFC pay-per-view last night. We're actually going to move on and do some email questions here. We have a whole bunch of them. So let's get into some of those, and we'll get back to the news here in a little while. This person here says, why does TNA suck? And he says, I mean this seriously. Hogan and Bischoff come in. They actually give Rob Terry a championship belt. They let Chris Daniels go. They have Nigel McGuinness look like a geek. All the people getting pushed are the same general people that would have been pushed in WCW. Matt Morgan, Rob Terry, Abyss. What do they all have in common? They're big and clumsy. Even Kurt Angle isn't getting any type of main event push right now. Bischoff and Hogan have this track record. Push big guys. Use the talented guys as mid-carders. And see Jericho, Chris, and Mysterio, for example. Poor machine guns. That's from Ryan. I don't know. Why does TNA suck, Mike?
Oh, there's all those reasons there. There's Vince Russo and all the guys that when WCW was dying, much like in the way that you're dying right now.
I'm doing great.
They're all still there, from production people to the head writer of the show. When WCW went down the tubes, general stupidity. One thing you didn't mention, the chair shot to Rob Terry's head.
That's right.
Is just ludicrously stupid. I mean, you know, you let go Consequences Creed and Christopher Daniels. It probably won't be the only talented guys, you know, or guys who you can get more out of than some of the other ones that are there, like Orlando Jordan putting, you know, whatever it is all over himself. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, TNA isn't even like, you know, Les Thatcher, do a show with him every week, and he also does a show at the website with Doc Young, but, you know, drives him nuts because of, look what they're doing to wrestling. I don't even look at it that way anymore. It's like, look at this bad TV show, and it's almost like just one big psychological and sociological experiment to watch TNA, to watch the people that show up there every week, and, you know, hey, I'll give them to their fans that are there. They at least keep in on part of the action, and they haven't given up and gotten as apathetic as most of their viewers have. I mean, it's just, it's just not a good TV show at all, period.
We've actually got news on a new show. They're actually putting together another new show, TNA Reaction, premieres this Monday at 7 before Impact on Spike TV. Spike presents TNA Reaction, a never-before-seen look at the combustible world of TNA wrestling with exclusive backstage access and candid interviews featuring the biggest names in wrestling. Fans will experience all the unseen drama as rivals speak openly about their plans to destroy their most hated foes. That's a real line, by the way, from this press release. TNA superstars featured include Hulk Hogan, Kurt Angle, Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles, and more. Premieres Monday on Spike at 7, 1 hour before TNA Wrestling Impact at the new start time of 8. Yes, they moved from 8 to 10 permanently starting this week with no announcement on last week's show. This company is just, I could just write a book on everything from January 4th until today. All of the changes in time slots, all of the different ideas about when we should run, should we have a replay, should we go head-to-head for 2 hours, should we go head-to-head for only 1 hour. It's just, it's amazing. And this new show, I guess the idea is, we'll remind people at 7 that the show starts at 8. I guess that's the idea. I guess in some ways it discourages WWE from moving from 8 to 11, which I think would be a bad idea anyway, because TNA will still have a one-hour jump on them. I haven't quite figured the show out yet, Mike. What is this?
It's just more cheap programming for Spike TV.
I guess, but
the sad part is, though, usually they'll run a UFC before it, And not having the UFC will make people forget that there's a UFC that usually comes on after Spike, and they'll stop turning it on right at 11 o'clock for the overrun, which is the only way that they're pumping up their rating right now. I mean, it doesn't matter how many shows that you have. I mean, when you end a show like you did last week, why would anybody want to come back to that? That was just like, remember David Flair had dropped to a knee in WCW even though he was crazy and had the crowbar, and he proposed to Stacey Keibler, and she took the ring and she started dancing and making fun of him, and then he was beat up by the Filthy Animals, and she was still dancing, and Sean Stasiak and the baby carriage could have been there, and it was that type of stuff. That's how the show ended last week. Like, I mean, it's just, it's not like they're not even trying. And I guess Vince Russo may be getting burned out. If that wasn't a sign of it, I don't know what is.
I just love the idea that, what did you say? They aren't even trying?
They're just, it's like, all right, we got to put a show on. All right, we're getting paid. Cool, guaranteed money. Let's go.
Oh,
and
I see.
They can't be trying. You have to do, the only thing they seem to, that guy seems to be trying is Doug Williams, for Christ's sake.
I thought you meant that the writers weren't trying, and that's part of the problem. They're trying too damn hard.
Well, yeah, I guess no, right? Yeah, I guess you can say you're trying too hard, but you would figure that something would work on the show, and nothing worked, and you ended it with that. That's your big goodnight moment, was that, you know, with Lacey Von Erich and the four boxes and the spider and just that.
If you didn't watch the show, everybody, I don't think we need to explain it to you. It was just a bad show, and there's a lot of stuff going on internally, and the fallout, I'm sure, is going to be happening in the next several weeks. I guess we'll just wait and see what ends up going down. But yes, Vince Russo was talking about being burned out. What a shocker. So now he's burned out. You know what I mean? He wasn't burned out on January 4th when he didn't sleep for 3 months to put together one show. You know what I mean? He's just now getting burned out now that the show's doing a 0.8 or whatever it's doing, 0.9. I mean, I've been burned out on his shows for 8 years now. So hopefully a change is made. But, you know, it's always funny listening to, you know, there are people. Obviously, Bischoff and Hogan aren't going to be writing a TV show. They're just not going to do it. They need a guy to actually write the show for them. And, you know, I always hear, well, if they get rid of Bischoff or if they get rid of Russo, you know, who could they replace him with? Anyone. The janitor. Borash, Mike Tenay, Don West. I could rattle off a list of 100 people I'd prefer to have writing the show than Vince Russo. The issue should not be, who can we get to replace Russo? The issue is, why is Russo still writing this awful show every week? That's the issue. I feel like I talk about this every week, probably because, you know, we do. All right.
Well, it's like, you know, humor us. Okay, you're not going to replace... Do some other things. Like, the women's matches have sucked since Dutch Mantel left. Hire Dutch Mantel back just to work with women. Do little baby steps if you can't make the, you know, pull the trigger on the big one. Do something.
Let's move on here. I don't want to talk about Impact. This is from Matthew. My question is concerning CM Punk. What are your thoughts on him? Do you believe we'll see him get a world title reign this year that is longer than a couple of months? It's impossible to say. I mean, Jack Swagger getting a world title run. A week ago, I would not have expected that, and I'm still shocked that I'm seeing it, to be honest with you. And God knows how long he'll remain champion, but Punk's been great. The thing with Ray's been really good. Obviously, they're going to a hair match next. I don't know if they're going to end up putting the mask on the line or if Punk's just going to lose his hair in the very first match, which is a possibility, by the way. So I guess we'll see what they end up doing. It's like I said, it's impossible to say whether anybody's going to win a title because you just never know the circumstances. I mean, when he won his first title, it was luck. Someone got hurt. They needed a new guy and he had a briefcase. So he got the title. I mean, stuff like that happens all the time. So there's really no way of knowing. I don't think they have plans to put the belt on him right now, but anything can happen.
Yeah, Punk's awesome. You know, obviously, you know, in a perfect world, they wouldn't even be going to hair yet, let alone anything else that they'll do with Rey Mysterio and CM Punk, because that should be going on for quite a long time. But I can't see it happening anytime soon. But then again, it's WWE. You never know.
Let's see. This person says, who does the UFC have who's actually a draw? Brock, GSP, etc. Brock Lesnar's obviously a draw. George St. Pierre if the UFC show on Mania weekend actually does do 770,000 buys, and he's undoubtedly a draw. On top of that, I think Chuck Liddell with the right guy would be a draw. We know as far as TV numbers, Kimbo's a draw. I don't know about on pay-per-view. Anyone I'm missing here, Mike?
Couture with the right guy, obviously, is a draw.
Yeah.
Outside of that, though, I think that's... I mean, as far as guys that, like, put it over, you know, general, you know, just a general bump, those are the guys who really do it. Maybe Rampage has too, but he did with Liddell, so I'm not sure. I know he's been on, you know, there was one where they had kind of like three main events too. So I'm not 100% sure about anybody else, but those are pretty much the big guys.
BJ Penn, actually, with the right guy, has been a draw. Same for WWE.
Yeah, that's right. That Philadelphia number wasn't that bad with him and even Anderson Silva coming off the UFC 100 last year.
And he says, same for WWE, if any. WWE, I mean, I don't think there are a lot of individual guys that are selling a lot of pay-per-view buys, for example. The pay-per-views are sold on stips and sometimes matches that people want to see, but not necessarily individual. Like, if Cena's headlining. But, I mean, everybody works all these pay-per-views, so it's hard to say. WWE name is a draw. Individual guys can be big draws in different places, like Rey Mysterio is going to help you draw huge in Mexico. John Cena and Rey and DX and guys like that are going to sell tons of merchandise. So they're money draws in that sense. But mostly in WWE, I mean, they go to places a couple times a year. The big show's coming to town. If you're a wrestling fan, you know to go. That's the big draw there, as opposed to individual folks. And his final question, would TNA have significantly lower ratings if they fired all former WCW and WWE guys but stayed on Spike? I'm not convinced that Foley, Jarrett Hall, or any of the rest mean much after they've been there for a month or so. Well, the ratings are down, so they're a negative. You know, it's almost like this TV has not created any new viewers and driven off old loyal viewers, which I thought was impossible. And that's why they're now hovering in the 0.9 range. So we can talk about that a little more after the break, actually, because Mike will get your thoughts on that. But we're heading to the break right now. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Only got a couple of minutes here, but Mike, the question, would TNA have significantly lower ratings if they got rid of all of the old WCW and WWE guys but stayed on Spike?
No, because they had that one there for seemingly like ever on Thursday night, so that's dropped to a 0.9. You know what? They could still get at least a 0.7 with no one that anyone's ever heard of, just because it'll be TNA, and I think people will watch. But, I mean, you know, you can't get rid of all of them, but you can get rid of enough of them, and it wouldn't exactly make a difference, which is why everyone wondered why the Dudleys are still there and why the Nasty Boys came in and Val Venus and Orlando Jordan in the way that they have. They don't need those guys.
Very quickly here, this person says, do you think that Dana White's reaction yesterday undermines MMA's position as a legit sport? Shouldn't Silva be allowed to win in any way he likes within the rules, regardless of whether he's entertaining enough for Dana? For example, in soccer, teams who protect one goal leads by playing defensively are applauded. It's just part of the sport.
No. Completely different. Absolutely completely different. It's still a fight sport, so... No, I mean, having the ability to go out there and finish a guy who you're obviously dominating and could do so is, you know, that's still the name of the game. I mean, and still, even if that's, yeah, he does have the right to win like that, but people have the right to be bored by it and have it hurt business.
I don't know a ton about soccer, but if a guy is protecting the goal, he's protecting the goal. Anderson Silva is attempting to not fight in a fight. They're completely different things. We're going to head to the hourly break. We'll be back in just a moment talking more pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Another hour of the show coming up, and we got a lot of stuff to talk about. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Got a lot of news to talk about today. Spent the first hour talking a lot about last night's UFC 112 pay-per-view from Abu Dhabi. We'll spend some time in this hour talking about the Strikeforce on CBS show, which is coming up this Saturday on, in fact, CBS. Take your phone calls and emails as well on a variety of subjects, and should be a good time. We've actually got somebody on the line right now, or maybe we don't. We'll do that in the next segment. Anyway, we've got a lot of news today, and Mike, the story last week, the death of Chris Kanyon, got some Observer and Figure Four obits this week that came out on the website, and any additional thoughts on his life and times after checking those out?
No, it's just, you know, I know a couple people who have issues with bipolar. Actually, you know, people through other people with issues with bipolar, and it's just such a cruel disease, because when you're on your highs a lot of the times, you know, you're going so manic and you're feeling so good that, you know, you don't need to take your medicine, and I'm not saying that's the case here, but it seems to happen a lot, and when the lows are really low, it's, you know, those crashes are terrible, and obviously, both obituaries, and Brian, the one that you had written really kind of drove it home a little bit more of the ups and downs that man had to go through, and James Mitchell, his manager in WCW, talked a lot about him and the fact he had a very long-term relationship with him from the time of being tape traders in the, from the old Wrestling Observer newsletter, classified days. It's very sad that a guy, it's too bad that a guy who loved the business as much as he did, couldn't find a spot doing something. I mean, for God's sakes, he loved his time in OVW. You figure a guy with that much passion and enough talent and you know, ability would have some value somewhere, and he never ended up having that value. And I know he kind of spun off the tracks at the end, and he would no-show appearances that he had, but it's too bad that way before this point, he couldn't continue to find a place in training in TNA or in WWE.
We'll talk about this more later on in the show. We have to head to a break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live, everybody. Brian Alvarez here, along with Mike Sempervivi of WrestlingObserver.com. The things that happened during the break, that's all I can say. Mike, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. You know, I was thinking, do we have any questions about Darren Young? Because I noticed something about Darren Young.
We'll talk about him in a second, but we've actually got somebody here on the line. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who's this and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Ed. I'm calling from Abu Dhabi.
Really? What's going on?
I was watching the fight last night, and it's hot here. And what's one of the questions I had for you? I work here. I've been here about a year and a quarter. One of the things that I was noticing last night watching the fight, including with BJ Penn, he came out breathing really hard. And I was watching, I don't know if you guys discussed this earlier, but I noticed some of them are really puffing in a different way. We've had a lot of heavy air pollution. It was an outside event. And yesterday it was about 107 with humidity. So I'm kind of curious how much of an influence this might have had, as well as with some of the dirt in the air. I noticed none of the guys were grappling because they were so slippery. So, I mean, was there any kind of feedback from Dana or anybody else about that?
I didn't hear anything, but it's funny you should mention that, because I can't remember what fight it was, but they did the show in an open-air arena, and I remember thinking, man, I wonder how hot it is over there right now.
Yeah, and actually, Brian, there was, because even the Associated Press reports had come out and mentioned the fact that everybody was very, very slippery.
Yeah, I thought about that, and the only thing I will say about BJ is that apparently BJ flew to Abu Dhabi weeks ago, so he should have.
I actually saw him training on the beach.
What was that?
I actually saw him training on the beach.
Yeah, I would think I would just think that he would in a couple of weeks have at least been somewhat acclimated to it. You know what I mean? More so than guys that flew in the last couple of days. But, yeah, I would not be surprised if that affected some or all of the guys last night, because, God, that would be tough just fighting in 100-degree weather with a lot of air pollution.
Oh, I would think it's not even, you know, plus the crowd there. Cause, I mean, I know that area, and it's just the humidity kicks in sometimes as well. So, I mean, it's it gets really nasty sometimes. And most people, when I live in the States, I had no breathing problems. Here I'm taking medicine daily for this, and it's a very common thing. So I'm just curious if that may have affected some of them.
Did you did you watch the show live or on tape?
No, they wanted over $1,000 for the good seats, U.S.
And oh, Jesus.
For the seats they were selling, they were roughly around $300, and they were still, like, in nosebleed sections. So we do get UFC free on TV here. So tease all the Americans at home. I got to watch it for free.
Oh, wow.
And even, like, events like WrestleMania, they're only, like, $15 here.
Go ahead, Mike.
You know, on pay-per-view.
No, you see, the lights underneath
WrestleMania 1, I think, was in 1995, so I'm still beating that. So,
go ahead, Mike.
I would say, the lights underneath it don't help matters either. That's why, a lot of the fights that used to take, the boxing events that used to be outdoors in Las Vegas, too, now they're all inside, and just for that reason, because, that's a lot of heat beaten down from those lights on top of everything else, just the natural conditions there anyway. So, again, like you were saying, Brian, BJ Penn is in fantastic shape, and he trains at a pretty good elevation in Hawaii anyway. So, really, I think there was something else that was a little more sapped out of him than that.
One last question before we let you go. What was the feedback as far as, like, newspaper reports on the show and the press with the performance of Anderson Silva?
Well, the Anderson Silva was quite negative. Everybody was kind of... His attitude was terrible. I had two points I caught with this, too. First off, I was curious, and I knew he was swearing in Portuguese. Not that I speak it, but you can kind of guess what he was saying. In this culture, you could be kicked out and banned for life for stuff like that. I was teaching in Saudi Arabia the other year. Some football player, soccer player, gave the bird to somebody, and a member of the royal family was there. That guy was on a plane the next day home. You swearing at people here can get you 6 months.
Wow.
And they take that real so, you give somebody the bird, that can get you 6 months in jail here.
Wow.
They take that kind of stuff highly offensive. So that kind of, I was kind of curious how that played off here, because I know what happened in Saudi a few years ago when a football player did that. The other thing that I was hearing, and I really don't want to do a negative rumor thing, but there was talks about people, because they do a lot of betting here, even though they're not supposed to, making the fight go longer, things of this nature. I don't know how much that's coming on the state side. I don't think that's the kind of promotion. I know it's the kind of promotion that Dana runs, but that was a big thing here, saying people were betting. If you notice, even watching the fight, if you go back and you see some of the guys that are dressed in their thobes, they're all standing up in the front. I mean, they're paying over $1,000 for these seats. Imagine the people behind them; these guys are just standing, and nobody told them to sit down. So I'm always kind of curious what kind of influence that could have had as well.
Well, I'll say this: you wouldn't need. You say it's not something Dana White would want. For something like that to happen, you wouldn't need Dana White. You'd need somebody going to Ed Soares and to Anderson Silva and saying, "This is what we want you to do." So, there's so many things that could happen in that. But that would have to be individually. That's not like, people talk about the pride days and institutionalized things like that. The UFC in 2010, they're not like that.
Yeah, I don't want to further any rumors or anything, because I don't know anything.
No, I didn't want to bring it up, but I don't, in my heart, I don't want to believe that either.
Yeah, I'm just going to say this, that during the Matt Hughes-Henzo Gracie fight, like I said, I was watching with a big crowd, and by the time round three started, I swear to God, that is what people were discussing. They were like, did somebody go to Matt Hughes' room last night and tell him we want this one to go three rounds? That's what people were saying. This is not news or anything like that, but that was the assumption people had when they saw that Matt Hughes-Henzo Gracie fight go three rounds. So, I don't know what happened, and maybe nothing did happen, but that's, it's not like you were the only person thinking that. I'll just say that.
Okay. Brian, I have one wrestling question if I could ask you.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, hypothetical situation. 10-15 years down the later, you were finally recognized for all your contributions to the wrestling society. Vince McMahon says to you, I want to put you in the Hall of Fame. Besides Lance Storm, what mainstream wrestler would you want to induct you?
Oh, God. That's a good question. I don't know. Obviously
you get
can't
a chance, please ask Dave that one too.
Thank you very much for the call. Let me think about that a bit. I don't know. Maybe I just have Lance do it. And actually, that far down the road, who knows who will be out of WWE and would be able to speak with me on the record, which is kind of the bigger issue right there. And in 15 years, there may be a guy that none of us have ever heard of that I think he would be the perfect guy to do that. So that's a good question. I really don't have a good answer for that one. Let's take a look at the mailbag here. Oh, you wanted to mention something about Darren Young. I know what you're going to say, actually, and I'd mention the same thing, but go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, it's somebody had written in and asked, is he just a really canned white guy or a black dude? I think he's a black dude, but I have to check the genealogy and the family tree, because if he's not related to John Cena, I'm just shocked.
Yeah, I really noticed that on SmackDown. His face, I mean, facially, he looks exactly like John Cena. It was creepy.
With troll doll hair. I mean, it's yeah.
Yeah, I was actually wondering if they were actually going to shave his hair off, because in a sense, it's like, it's good because it separates him from everybody else. I mean, you don't forget the guy because of his troll doll hair. But it's a horrible hairdo, so I was kind of split either way about what they should do. This person here says, I like the Silva fight. Thought it was entertaining spectacle. How legit do you think Dana's anger at it really is? Oh, Dana was very upset.
Furious.
And
yeah.
Part of his anger seems like a buildup to make Silva a heel against GSP. Well, no, because he was actively talking about not wanting to even put that fight together. I think he may. I'm not going to say he will. But Dana was very, very upset, and I'll just say that you were in the 1% of people that found that fight to be entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It would have ended after the second round and after that madness, and that would have been fine. But, yeah, I mean, look, the UFC is going to a new place with new reporters with, this is a serious sport, and obviously it's a little bit easier there than it has been in other markets. But still, I mean, you want to put on a professional performance, and Silva just did not do that. I mean, it was just a poor situation. So, yeah, to be honest with you...
Hold that thought. We have to head to a break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking more about Anderson Silva. The topic of today's show has been Anderson Silva. And, Mike, you had something you wanted to mention right before we went to the break.
Well, it's just, we were talking about, before the last couple of shows, it's just, B.J. Penn already tried to go up and be GSP, and even though he can beat the crap out of most guys for 170, probably, he can't be GSP, and, GSP walks around at about 190, but Anderson Silva walks around at about 220, which would make an upper weight, catch weight fight for them, or a fight if GSP moved up to 205. I think he would 185, he'd have a real, real problem with it. But with that said, I have no idea how Anderson Silva is going to come down from walking around at about 220. Maybe he doesn't walk around at that much anymore. But to cut down to 170 and then the rehydration afterwards, that would be something to behold anyway. Especially when there's so many guys out there, really. I'd rather see Koscheck again, even though people like super fights. I would still rather see Koscheck, if he gets by daily, especially spectacularly, I'd rather see him against GSP again.
Let's talk a little bit about the Strikeforce on CBS show. I know you've got the card in front of you, so let's run it down.
Yeah, this is one of those cards. It's like the second Elite XC card on CBS, where it's like there were some good hardcore fights on there, and people didn't watch it. It'll be interesting to see how this one does, because the hardcores have to be happy. I mean, Jake Shields and Dan Henderson, obviously Henderson, a longtime, hardcore favorite, and a guy that I know people think has got something coming off the ball after his knockout at Bisping and leaving UFC. Again, nothing against Dan Henderson. I don't think ultimately that his name really matters all that much. I think the fact that it's a title fight on CBS against Jake Shields actually means a little bit more, even though you have some story with Henderson to tell. It's not like CBS or Strikeforce has really been beating the drum out there doing that anyway leading up to this. The great hardcore fight for fans of Japan, King Mo and Musashi, who probably most general fans know as the guy that Dana White actually wanted to keep with that whole Fedor deal that he had offered up falling through. But Musashi and King Mo ought to be fun. I think Musashi knocks out King Mo, although with his wrestling skill, that's going to be, I think, a fun fight. And then the big one for the hardcores is Gilbert Melendez and Shinya Aoki in the top two 155-pound guys, unless you want to argue... Eddie Alvarez or somebody like that who aren't in UFC in what should be a really intriguing and a really interesting fight. But again, these are all three guys who are appealed to, or all six guys who appear to appeal to hardcore fans, and I'm stunned that they couldn't get a Bobby Lashley or even a female fight or something else actually on this show.
Yeah, this is a, I mean, it's a great card if you're a hardcore MMA fan, but we're talking about an audience that is even more casual than the audience that's going to watch Spike TV. This is CBS on a Saturday night, and you got to have some stars or a freak show type spectacle or something like that. It's interesting. I mean, they're headlining with Dan Henderson. That's the closest thing to a name they've got on the show. And he's going to be facing Jake Shields, which, again, your average CBS audience, no idea who the guy is. And if this show does not do a good rating, I mean, Saturday night, the average is probably going to be higher than what this show does. And if it does below like a 1.5, which I don't know what it's going to do, but if it does less than like a 1.5, I mean, this could be the end of Strikeforce on CBS, and that's not good for the sport. I don't know really. I don't want to say I don't know what they're thinking, but no Bobby Lashley match on this show. They didn't go out of their way to try to get Herschel Walker on this show. I mean, you can say what you will about those guys as fighters. Herschel Walker's had one fight. He's an old football player, but people tuned in to see him. I mean, you need to get ratings to keep your show on the air. And I know people are going to send in emails and say, well, what's so different about TNA attempting to get ratings and all this and that? And I can get into that later if you really want me to, but there are massive differences, not the least of which is TNA isn't about to be canceled if they don't do a good number. But yeah, I look at this card and I just think this is going to be a very, very tough sell. Maybe a hell of a show, but it's going to be a tough sell, and I hope that when it's over, we still have Strikeforce on CBS.
Yeah, and Herschel Walker, I mean, I don't think he would have done it, but, you know, at least he carried himself like a champion, and he looked, you know, he didn't embarrass himself, and in fact, he made people intrigue, so, you know, nobody can say anything bad about him there. And I guess the one thing they could also say is, well, look, there's no other sports going on right now. The NHL playoffs are beginning, but there's nothing really going on, so we can put this showcase of our champions up. Yeah, I guess you could do that, but on the other hand, there is no basketball. Baseball's early. You know, there's the NBA going on, but it's the early, you know, I don't even think the season's going to be over yet. There's nothing really out there. Put another name on there to attract all those regular sports fans and draw them into possibly watching your show. I don't think the show's going to do very good. I don't think it's the last one on CBS either, but I don't think the show's going to do all that good, which is too bad because they haven't hyped it up enough to showcase these dudes.
So that's the show this coming weekend, and speaking of Herschel, it's appearing that he'll probably be fighting again in the fall. It's looking like Bobby Lashley is probably going to be fighting in May. Fedor Emelianenko, I don't think anybody has any idea what's going on there. Dana White has hinted that he's very close to doing something with Fedor, and meanwhile, Fedor's side is saying they have no idea what he's talking about, so I guess we'll see what happens there. But an interesting time in mixed martial arts. And that's not the only show this coming weekend. TNA has a pay-per-view as well, their lockdown pay-per-view. And, you know, a month ago, I thought, man, you know, TNA lockdown, they're probably going to have a War Games match with either Hogan and Flair in the match or captaining teams. You know, it's probably going to do a pretty good pay-per-view number by TNA standards. And here we are a week out, and boy, have I changed my mind. This show, this pay-per-view coming up, I never thought I'd say this about a lockdown, but who could possibly want to buy this show?
I don't know. I mean, again, one, they don't have any... How many matches? I'm not even sure how many matches are actually announced. It's not many, and it's not like they really care about them on the TV show as it is, but there's only like a couple of matches announced, I think, and that's the other thing, too. Are they going to have like four matches? That's it? With one of them being Kurt Angle and Anderson again?
Well, let's go to the TNA pay-per-view page and see what they've announced so far. This is Lockdown on their website. Family Arena in St. Louis, by the way. We've got the Pope against AJ Styles for the TNA title. Should be a good match. I guess a lot of this will depend on what the go-home show looks like on Monday. I've been told the go-home show is not all that great. Basically, if you did not like last week's show, you're not going to like this one. And I didn't like last week's show, so that's not boding well for this one. But we'll see. But that's the main event of the show. We've also got the Lethal Lockdown, which I guess is War Games. If you've watched TNA for a while, that's what one would assume. They have not bothered to explain the rules of this particular match, which, way to go, TNA. We've got Hogan captaining a team. Actually, I'm sorry, Abyss is the captain. Hogan's not wrestling, nor is Flair. But it's Abyss, Jarrett, RVD, and Jeff Hardy against Sting, Beer Money, and Desmond Wolf.
Abyss is captaining a team that has Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Hardy, and Rob Van Dam.
Yeah.
Lovely.
We've got Angle and Mr. Anderson in a cage match. And then we've got Kazarian, Shannon Moore, and Douglas Williams in a three-way for the X Division title, which actually is fascinating because they're announcing this match before TV on Monday where the match gets made. Welcome to TNA, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give them this. I mean, apparently, Dave, I'm not sure how big the family arena is, but if they, I heard they sold like some like 2,200 tickets legit or something like that, which is good because I know the costs that have to happen running outside of the impact zone, but you know what? A change of pace never does you too bad. Or at least a change of location. Now, of course, if the wrestling sucks, the wrestling still sucks, but you know, a change of pace crowd-wise is something I think that they actually need.
Angle and Mr. Anderson again.
Again, I mean, they had the blow-off and the bad guy gets leaves the territory with his tail between his legs before they even had the first match. So, I mean, I don't even think they know why they're wrestling the match, but if they put in a yeoman's effort, I guess, you know, as of right now, it looks like one of the best matches on the show, all four of them.
Well, kind of. I mean, the cage match is they've got a key. It's an escape the cage match. I guess there's going to be a top on the cage. The only way to escape is through the door. Every cage match I've ever seen like that, there's just a referee that opens the door when you ask. Now apparently there's going to be a lock on it, and you're fighting each other to get a key that will allow you to get away from the other guy. It's such a fascinating overbooked concept here. And I don't know if you guys watched Impact on Monday, Kurt Angle just announced a couple of days ago that he's going to do the match on Saturday or Sunday, and then he's going to take some time off. But he's not hurt, he says. He's just going to take some time off. Did you see that ladder match? How is the guy not hurt? He took a bump over the top rope to the floor and looked like he'd nearly killed himself. He tried to tell people he wasn't hurt, but now, a couple of days later, we hear, I'm going to get through this pay-per-view match and then take time off. He got hurt in that match, which, shocking, a ladder match with Kurt Angle and Mr. Anderson, what did you expect was going to happen? You know, I want to, I know you got a lot to say, I do as well. We're up against a break right here, but I didn't want to rant and rave about TNA, but when we come back, I got a couple of things to say, and I know you want to talk about the chair shot as well, and some other stuff. So I want to get into that, and then we'll wrap up with some other wrestling and MMA news as well. But my dander is now up, so I've got to address this here. So that's coming up in the next segment, everybody. We'll be right back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Ryan Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Taking your phone calls, emails, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 20 minutes or so. And, I got some stuff to say about TNA here. The more I think about this show this past Monday night, and as noted, the ladder match where Kurt Angle nearly killed himself, and apparently now is going to have to take some time off, and the chair shot to Rob Terry that destroyed the chair and busted him open hard way. I mean, it just illustrated that this is a company that doesn't care at all about the people that work there. And it kind of makes me mad because, I mean, if Eric Bischoff came on TV or did interviews and just said that, you know, these guys are all, they're all just, you know, expendable. They're all just bodies. The old thing that Bret Hart claimed about Vince McMahon, that we're just going to ride him until they ain't got nothing left and we're going to put a bullet in him. At least you're being honest. But to have them come out here and talk about how we're all a family, you know, we all love each other, we're all, you know, it's just everything is great and happy and that sort of thing. And then to put a guy like Kurt Angle, how many broken necks has the guy had? He's lost count. You know, he's 40-something years old. He's can't move. He can't move backstage. He moves fine in the ring, but, you know, the guy's hurting all over. Mr. Kennedy, you know, his gimmick is that he tears every muscle in his body. He's even written about it, about what a fragile man he is. You put these two guys in a ladder match, I mean, the only two guys that would have been worse in a ladder match as far as putting their lives on the line are Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash. And those two guys wouldn't have been stupid enough to climb the ladder in the first place. So really, these are the two worst guys you could have put in the ladder match. Because you know that Kurt Angle is going to try and have the best match he possibly can. You know that he's going to force Ken Anderson to work. So that's like the two worst possible guys you could put in a high-risk match. They did. Angle took a bump over the top rope, nearly killed himself. And, of course, Anderson took his bumps as well, and thankfully he appears to be okay. But, you know, he very well could have killed himself taking some of these bumps off this ladder. Rob Terry chair shot to the head. You know, it was guys, I'm sure there were arguments about whether they should do it or not. I mean, you can't tell me that everybody in this company was just like, yeah, let's do it. You know that somebody had to have spoken up and said, you know, this is an unprotected chair shot to the head. Maybe we shouldn't do this. But they did it. So, you know that one side won out, and I don't know. I just, blood, the Orlando Jordan thing. I mean, does anyone really care about Orlando Jordan's gimmick in 2010? I mean, is this really edgy? Is this really something that's going to, I mean, I guess we're talking about it here now, but is it making any difference? I don't think so. I just, these people have no idea what they're doing. I've said this so many times before, but they have no idea what they're doing, and worse, now they're endangering people's lives. It's just, it's really amazing to me, and what can I say? Changes need to be made, and they couldn't be made fast enough.
It's like Orlando Jordan's gimmick. I mean, it was like the Muhammad Hassan thing in WWE. Not that I wasn't, you know, if you want to do a gimmick like that, fine. At least do something with it. Get the writers in there who can write something dramatic. You know, I mean, why can't it be Orlando Jordan's the wrestler who ends up happening to be gay? Why does it have to be, no, you know, I'm going to slather buttermilk on myself and have, you know, I'm androgynous, I like men and women. All this nonsense and stupidity. And if you're going to have that nonsense and stupidity, do something with it. Just don't keep, you know, doing what they're doing now, which is kind of like pulling back on. I mean, either do it or don't do it, and I'd rather have you not do it. But they're probably stupid enough to do it. I mean, you know, the fact that they do a chair shot to the head and the way that they did to Rob Terry, number one, that's to copy the Big Bubba Rogers, Dusty Rhodes thing in WCW Crockett way back in the day when Bubba came on as Jim Cornette's bodyguard. When you hear Dusty Rhodes and Jim Cornette talk about that, the reason that that wooden chair busted over his head is Klondike Bill forgot to gimmick up the chair. You know, that was the whole point, was to have a gimmick chair hit him in the head to make him look like a Superman, not to bash a chair over his head, you know, ECW style, but back in the 90s. I mean, it's just stupid now, and to have that happen on a time where it's being written about Canyon, who, you know, his throwing up after concussions was not like it was just a known story now. I mean, to do that on the week that he passes away was really bad for him anyway, and to top it off, this comes from the people that had enough bad form to have Canyon fall off the top of the cage at the Kemper Arena a year after Owen Hart died. So it's run to, it goes back to who it's run by, and that's why I don't even look at it this way. Les was getting upset about being a wrestling show. You know what? It's not a wrestling show anymore. It's just a really crappy TV show.
It's a freak show. It's the geek show at the carnival is what it is right now. You know, the someone mentioned this to me, and I don't know. I actually should check around about this, but They were mentioning that, you know, you guys never mention it, but the beer bottles that are broken over guys' heads. I mean, I don't know, but I guess I would just presume they've got to be real beer bottles. I mean, I know you can buy breakaway bottles or sugar. They're made of sugar. They use them in movies and that sort of thing. They use them in movies, everybody, because, you know, it's fake, of course. Not in TNA. I don't want to rant about it too much because I don't know for sure. But, I mean, if those are real beer bottles, Jesus, you're breaking a glass bottle over a dude's head and sending shards of sharp glass flying everywhere. What?
Well, I don't think that they are. But if they are, I mean,
that's where, I mean, yes, people make fun of WCW for gimmicks and such about having, like, props. But realistically, what they used to do back in the day, like, they loved doing this in Memphis. They loved it in Memphis, was to take a Coke bottle, a small Coke bottle, and then apparently you put it in the oven for a little bit of time, and it softens the glass enough where, yes, glass is still going to go everywhere, but that's how they actually softened it to do it. Hopefully TNA is just using a prop. I think they're just using props. I would hope that's the case, but with their, I don't know, with their lust of blood, they're still going to have the blade out anyway, because, you know, that makes them so much different than WWE.
Well, you can, I mean, it's easy to find, like, a gimmicked chair, but they don't use those.
I mean, no,
it's not like
true.
I can't just run to QFC and get a gimmicked beer bottle, you know what I mean? I don't know, maybe they do use gimmicked ones, but...
They're at Disney or whatever that place is, Universal Studios in Orlando. Somebody's got a prop up in there or could pull one together pretty quick.
You'd think. But again, as I've said a million times, you think a lot of stuff about TNA, and that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what they do. The I had another point as well, but I can't remember what it was. It may have been about the Orlando Jordan thing. You mentioned that. Yeah, but I mean, I guess on that subject with Orlando, I mean, like you said, either do it or don't. I mean, they're going halfway here. He comes down from the ceiling. He sits down with a guy and a girl. To the back! He comes out last week. He pours a little bit of milk on himself. To the back! You know, what is going on here? I mean, is this building to something?
Now that's how they're lazy again, too, because now they're back into doing what was driving you nuts about TNA before with stupid production arrows and giving things away and crap like that. That you hoped would have gone away, which have not gone away.
I remember what I was going to say. This is kind of a spoiler. I won't mention names or anything like that. I'll just... and I can't believe I'm even talking about this because I don't even want to promote TNA tomorrow based on this. But so tomorrow on Impact, we've got a chair broken over a dude's head. Or actually not even broken. It just destroyed the chair and cut him open hard way. We've got the two dudes in a ladder match nearly killing themselves. We've maybe got the aforementioned beer bottles. I don't know, so we won't harp on that one too much. But so guess what we get tomorrow on Impact? Why? Fire.
Sure.
Blown fire. And somebody on their I think it was on their Twitter or something like that, or maybe it was one of the wrestlers. I can't remember where I saw this, but they claim that the guy who had the fire spat on him. First off, it took three tries because something went wrong, and of course it's taped, so they can edit it. But or maybe they won't. You know, I don't know. I presume they would edit it, but again, you assume a lot of things about TNA. So presumably they edit it, but they claim that the person that had the fire spat on them had their eyebrows burned off and skin burnt. I don't know if it's legit or not. I guess we'll find out, but does it matter? You're playing with fire.
Well, the WWE played with knives with Chris Angel.
That is true.
They make them different, Brian. They make them different. They stand out now.
Let's
an idiot. You know, the only way they're going to do fire, fine. They're doing fire. That means Kevin Sullivan can come back and write the show or something like that. And, you know, just stupid.
Let me read this email here. Do you think if Paul Heyman was willing to bend a little with TNN and not be so hard-headed that the network would have helped out ECW the same way Spike TV is now helping out TNA financially? Well, Heyman was getting on TNN after he knew the ship was sinking. It's not like they gave him this deal and then all of a sudden he started burying him. I mean, he was setting the table to make them the heels for when the whole thing fell apart. So it was a very, very different situation. And... actually, Heyman's...
and it wouldn't have mattered, because they had Raw coming on anyway, so it didn't matter one bit.
Yeah. Been a lot of people mentioning Heyman's name as a guy that should come in and take over the booking in TNA. I don't want to say I don't think he would do it. They would have to offer him a lot of money. I don't know. It's like, Spike has helped out with some of these contracts here, you know. TNA can't afford to pay Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and all these guys, so TNA has chipped in some money. And by the way, a hell of an investment so far. But I don't know, maybe they'd, you know, maybe Spike would chip in and they'd offer Heyman $500,000 a year to come in and book. Maybe do it. I don't know, but someone needs to come in here.
Well, that's the thing, and you know, it doesn't have to be Heyman, you know, Kevin Sullivan, anybody, Jim, anybody. It doesn't matter, anybody. It doesn't matter. Just make a change, because this isn't working. In fact, it's just making it worse. And that's what kills me about Spike. I mean, they rush out last week very quickly to say, okay, we're going to 8 to 10 permanently. There's always going to be a replay on Thursday, in case you want to watch Raw anyway. The replay will be there on Thursday, and we're going to add a show. Okay, great. It doesn't really matter. I mean, the quality control, if anybody watches that show, just it amazes me. You know, USA keeps a strong eye on Raw, sometimes for good and sometimes for bad, but they keep a strong eye on it. It's just amazing that Spike TV, being a Viacom-owned company, and yes, they go for lowbrow programming and things like that, but still, have some quality control, for Christ's sakes. The thing closest to you is the UFC, and you see the kind of production that they put on for, you know, their repeat shows of old pay-per-views kill your numbers. So, you know, look at that and take an example from it.
Yeah, it was funny when I was writing the ratings report last week, and I was writing about all the changes, and for those keeping track, they switched from Thursdays to Mondays, and they went from 9 to 11, and then they canceled the Thursday replay. But then they brought the replay back, and they left it on for 2 weeks. Then they canceled again. Then they decided to try to go from 8 to 10 for one time only. Then they decided to go permanently one time only. Then they brought the replay back. Now they're bringing in a show from 7 to 8. I'm just sitting here thinking, look at all of the wackiness here. Trying to find the perfect day, the perfect time, the perfect lead-in. All of these things are trying, yet not even apparently a thought to, hey, maybe we should replace the people putting this stupid show together.
Yeah, maybe we should try to put together a perfect show.
Yeah, that's lower on the priority list. The time slot is the important thing here.
Well, you know, it was AOL who really killed WCW.
Sure. 13 minutes of ranting about Impact here, by the way, everybody. I apologize to that. But what can you do? We're going to talk a little bit more about the Raw and Impact shows tomorrow, mostly Raw. We'll talk about the guest hosts, and there's quite a guest host coming up, and I'm very excited about it. We'll talk about that when we get back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We're back here for the final segment on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Tomorrow, David Hasselhoff is on Raw, and Mike, as excited as people might be about that, I was filled with joy when I heard that in just a couple of weeks, Flava Flav is coming to Raw.
No Chuck D, no Terminator X, no, just Flavor Flav, Flavor of Love Part 2, Flavor Flav is going to be the ghost host on Raw, and I'm wondering who is going to be more lucid, either Flav or Timberland from a couple weeks ago.
I'm certain.
We saw more energy than Pete Rose.
I mean, we talked about this actually during the break, but I will bet that Flava Flav is more coherent than Timberland, just because Flav is in fact still around. He's a survivor, so I think he's going to be all right on the show.
I guarantee you that the Bella Twins will be out there in good use.
That's right. David Hasselhoff, what do you expect?
I expect the UFC to see his performance on Raw on Monday night and scoop him up to try to get the government of Germany to get off their backs as far as all the regulations and TV pulling that they want to do of the UFC over there.
I presume we're going to get like a Baywatch Bay Battle Royal?
I would think that's guaranteed, although hopefully Maryse is still there doing commentary saying how she can't believe she doesn't want to be in this either.
That's right. It's Maryse versus Eve tomorrow for the women's title. I think that's the only match they've announced for the show. And what a preview that is.
I have off there. You don't need to.
That's right. So that's tomorrow, everybody, and we're going to be back next week with another live show. We'll be previewing the TNA pay-per-view, and hopefully we won't rant about it for 13 minutes like we did tonight. And, of course, all the latest news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts and brand new radio shows every single day up at WrestlingObserver.com. Head up there right now. Check it out. If you like what you hear, consider ordering a subscription. You will not be sorry. But either way, we're back again live next week. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.